You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
And a very good Friday morning to you. Michael McNamara in for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning wherever you may be, and hope you're excited about another spring weekend. So, with that said, we are our chef is tied up this morning, so he will not be joining us. And I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do about that. So we're going to play it by ear, see how it goes. So if there's anything you want to talk about, by all means, shoot me an email, and we can talk about that. Or if you want to give me a call, you can be part of the program today. Yeah, if you feel like being interviewed, you've never been interviewed, how about that? So feel free to bust us off a call here. So we'll check the news of the day, and then I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure what we're gonna do today. So I'm kind of mulling it about, and I don't know. I'm just I'm a little bit in a quandary. I have a couple things that you know. Sometimes when people cancel, I don't like to do it too much. But with quality stuff, I will, certainly replay it. Because I will tell you this, one of the great treasures is All Marine Radio Archive. Seriously. If you go in there, you know, I just tell you, in the last week, Grant Newsham twice, in the last week, 10 days, General Kennedy again on combat leadership. Yeah, I mean, just awesome stuff. You know, I got emails saying, hey, Mac, you know, that thing with Kennedy ought to be, you know, a PME. Much like I heard about the one I did with Dave Furness, that, and you know, Jeremiah Workman, Charlie Linville, Cal Humphrey. You know, listen, that there's so much wisdom in that. Sergeant Major Brian Zikafoos. There's so much wisdom in that stuff, you know. There's so much wisdom. And ironic thing, in fact, my younger son was up last night, and we were just hanging out, watching hockey. And as we were talking, I those interviews invariably come up. And and I said, you know what's interesting? It all comes back to one word. And he looked at me and said, what? And I said, guess. So he winced, you know, he winced for a second. And I said, think about it. And he said, he looked at me, he said, the D word? I said, yeah, the D word. It all comes back to the D word. So it's interesting, I think, that, you know, there's so many different things that we want to be good at. But if you don't, when you see Marines, if they're not disciplined, the rest of it's bullshit. The rest of it is bullshit. Yeah, and it is. So, look, you can be all high speed that you want. And you know, you heard Mike Musselman say it the other day, talking after Paul Kennedy came on, General Kennedy, Major General Paul Kennedy. And so Kennedy talks about how easy it is to kill and how important discipline is to restrain that. And how you can see that in units, and you see it how they operate. And I think I asked Kennedy, how long does it take when you're with a unit to? He said I'd say instantly, but it probably takes, you know, doesn't take more than 30 minutes. If you've been around a little bit, doesn't take more than 30 minutes. And so then I had Mike Musselman on, and I asked him the same thing. I said, hey, Mike, you know, you're out and about, and when you're, you know, when you're looking at this kind of stuff, how long does it take? He said, instantly. instantly, man. You know. So I just find it very interesting. You know, the more people you talk to, the more, you know, great guys that we have on this program, and women, you know, that talk about their experience. The more that word becomes the word. The word. It's the word of the organization, discipline. And I'll give you an example. You can be going to do I'm a grunt, so let me give you a grunt. You're going to go do a fire and maneuver range, you know, and a generic one, not a high speed, low drag. So what do you expect to see? So you walk out on the grinder, you expect to see what? Your company, your platoon, your battalion being formed, right? Now let's be platoon. We'll be platoon because that's easier. You see your platoon getting ready to go. What do you expect to see? You expect to see staff sergeant standing out front. You expect to see sergeants, right, talking to their squads, right? You expect to see people coming and going. So-and-so forgot this. So-and-so's got to grab this. Got to make sure this is doing this. Checking EDLs, blah, 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 blah. Humvee shows up, got water in it, checked in with the ammo tech. They're going to meet us on the range. Another lieutenant from the company. And maybe the company XO, they're already out at the range, they've signed it out, they're RSO-ing, blah, 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 blah. But what are you seeing? You're seeing everybody out there looking the same, checking their gear, got their weapons. When you don't see that, when you see different uniforms, when you see a staff sergeant running around, and the squad leader standing around, right? When you see dirty uniforms, when you see an EDL that's screwed up, when you see that kind of stuff, those are all symptoms of bad, bad, bad leadership. So So it's interesting how all of it comes back to one word, discipline. Discipline. And then right behind that is the word leadership. We need a disciplined force to win in combat, and the thing that creates discipline is leadership. Leadership understands it. Leadership knows how to do it. And if you can't do that, you need to get out. And you need to have the people, the leaders, that'll put them up. Sad, you know. We wish everybody could stay in forever, but not everybody can do it. And so it's interesting. It's interesting, the more we do that, the programs that we do, the more that what it comes down to is the discipline. And the sad, as Mike, you know, you might hear that this morning, Mike on combat leadership from the other day, but, cause it was a great little segment, but Mike, when I asked him, I said, and Mike, when you see it, what do you feel? Bad leadership. He's like, oh, it's sad. It's heartbreaking. Because you know in combat, and this is what we're talking about, you know, being forward in Iraq or Afghanistan for us, you know that guys are going to die that don't have to die. Yeah, that's the sad reality of that lack of discipline. People die. And when you see it and you know it's coming and you talk to people and you say, you've got to get your shit together. You know, you've got to get your shit together. The way you live like pigs. All right. That isn't the Marine Corps way. The way you wear your uniforms. I mean, you had Will Constantini talking about, uniforms, blood, all that stuff. It's not what we do. It's demoralizing. You might think you're a badass, but it isn't. Right? We're Marines. We act like Marines. So it's interesting. Interesting stuff. Anyway, we're going to check the news here in a few minutes. But first, we certain things we do, especially on Friday. So Whitney Houston sings the National Anthem in my favorite edition of the National Anthem. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Probably not, though, because I love that thing. So here she is. Colleen follows that. Marines from the Rotunda of the National Museum of the Marine Corps follow that. And then we'll check the weather, and then we'll come back and check the news. And then you might hear the gunner today on combat leadership. Mike's thoughts on that. So the Whitney Houston at the Super Bowl. Good morning. This.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, wave us home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. Done, Dad.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Great speech. I Sean Kennedy, Irish Catholic. I'm supposed to like him. Not a fan. Bay of Pigs, Vietnam. Yeah, not so much about civil rights. Yeah, John Kennedy. I struggle with it. So, just so you know. The, yeah, I decided, you know, the whole Kennedy thing. If you've listened to the program, you know my thoughts about that. And we'll check the weather real quick, and then we'll check the news. There's a bunch of it today. China in the news, Russia in the news. Everybody getting their swag on. So we'll see. Currently in Quantico, cloudy, 69 degrees. In Camp Lejeune, warming up, 77 under sunny skies. Granbury, Texas, about the same as yesterday, 73 under cloudy skies. In North Dakota, sunny and all the way up to 46 in the morning. How about that? 29 Palms, sunny and 61. Pendleton, sunny 51. Camp Smith, cloudy, dark, 75. Okinawa, warming up, cloudy, dark, 73. In the city of Al-Fallujah, Iraq. Home of the Martyrs Cemetery, one of them. I'm sure there's many. Sunny in 87. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is mostly cloudy, 57 degrees on our way to 84. Boom. Yeah. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by my friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug. This thing gets milled and machined and anodized from a 10-pound block into something cool. And you got to check it out. Go to battlemug.com. Check out all the products. I tried to do that for you yesterday. Hopefully you were paying attention. And so it's an interesting whole product line. Each one has Picatinny rails on it. And go check it out. There's some jazzed up coffee cups, if you will, okay, known as Battle Mugs to you. That's right, because you're an operator. Anyway, it has Picatinny rails on it, mil-spec stuff. You can check the whole line out at battlemug.com. It's a perfect gift for any commemorative event, or any event, really. If you want to show somebody who's served and been around a little bit that here's a cool gift, this might be the one you ought to look at. I'm telling you, at least check it out. It's among cool gifts. People would walk into the office and look at that and go, what is that? That's a Battle Mug, bro. Check it out. Anyway, you can get 15% off. That's right, 15, not 10, 15, by using the promo code Marine when you order. It's a veteran-owned and operated company. The product's made entirely in the United States. So, yeah, check it out. Military by owner, Dave Graham. Check them out, too. Also, the Global Slaw Foundation. All great sponsors of All Marine Radio, and more are on the way. Fired up about that. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the morning here a little bit. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, our a quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the GlobalSoft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Something's going on. Something just popped. Something just went bing. All right. There you have it. Good morning to you. Again, we continue on a show that, a show about nothing today. It's kind of like a Seinfeld episode. How about that? Sounds like a theme. So what I'm going to do for you, here's what I decided. I had people like sending in some recommendations. You know, we'll keep Bono in the background. Okay, Mac, I've got an idea. I would like to hear General Barrow again. Okay, all right. There's one request. So you're gonna hear General Barrow talk about women in combat. What it is. All right. Do you have any other requests? Let me know. And we'll see what we could do. We'll see what we could do. You want to know why? Because that's the kind of guy that I am. That's right. You got that going for you. Anyway, we're going to check the news here. That means the music has to go away. Because this is a sobering part of the show. I would characterize the news today like this. Mucho saber rattling around the world. Okay? I guess we're going to find out who blinks. So everybody getting their combat on right now, or their wannabe combat. So pretty little interesting thing that is going on around the world. Yeah. Pretty interesting thing going on. So it goes. Nervous about China, Southeast Asia gets Trump's attention with Pence in Indonesia. So the vice president, which he will be, I don't know necessarily the first, but he will be certainly the one of the parade of American officials that will head to the Western Pacific to assure our allies that, unlike every other time we've committed forces in the last 20 years, we're serious about it this time. Oh, Matt, you didn't say you were in a bad mood today. I'm not. Just trying to keep it real, kids. Just trying to keep it real. Do you want to take American military and, well, not military resolve. You want to take American political resolve to the bank? Do you? Okay. Be careful. All you got to do is just got to do a little fact checking. And that doesn't work out so well. When they come now, do they leave it better? Do they leave it worse? And draw a line for me at 1960. And if you do that... Yeah, damn it. I hate when they do that. Yeah, it doesn't turn out so good. So anyway, and again, you've heard Grant Newsham on the program. So what is Southeast Asia worried about? Hey, look, we don't need, we're having a tough enough time, right? We're like everybody else trying to get, our economy going, blah, 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 blah. We don't need the instability that's coming to the Western Pacific. And here's more than that, what we really don't need. We don't need you to create something and then cut a deal with China that leaves us in a worse place. We don't need that. Okay? We don't need that. So, anyway, Mike Pence in the Western Pacific. China. This is a hysterical CNN story, so take it for what it's worth. Okay. What does this mean? China puts its bombers on high alert. To do what? When was the last time the Chinese bombed something? U.S. official, with an eye on North Korea, China puts bombers on high alert. Right, so let me get this straight. The nation that hasn't for 25 years helped the United States with Korea now has bombers on high alert in order to do what? Okay, this is CNN from Washington. Chinese Air Force land attack cruise missile capable bombers were put on quote-unquote high alert on Wednesday as the U.S. sees evidence that the Chinese military is preparing to respond to a potential situation in North Korea. The official said that the U.S. has also seen an extraordinary number of Chinese military aircraft being brought up to full readiness through intensified maintenance. So they're working on airplanes, and then they put somebody on high alert. Okay. Sorry. Not really shaking in my boots yet, but okay. These recent steps, by the way, this is like pointing the battle group that's 3,500 miles away towards North Korea. These recent steps by the Chinese, it looks better in print than it actually is in the world. These recent steps by the Chinese are assessed to be as part of an effort to, quote, reduce the time to react to a North Korea contingency. But what does that mean? What are they going to do? Okay. And so, you know, like I said, okay, and I'll play you the CNN report, okay, which, you know, designed from the Situation Room, designed to promote hysteria in the streets, okay? We used to watch the Situation Room from Iraq and go, what are they talking about? Where is that? That's down Mamadiyah, Iskandaria. The classic story is us, me and the Combat Operations Center, and I think we were doing the second Fallujah, or is after that thing and maybe wrapped up, and 24th MU, 22nd MU was down in Iskandaria, Mamadiyah, something like that. And they kicked off this bullshit operation doing nothing but the same stuff they did every day. But they gave it a name. So, you know, slow news day, or maybe it was just a normal news day. CNN sees the name. Now it's a named operation, right? And then they called it, their PAO called it the Triangle of Death. Yeah. So the report goes up on CNN. So we're working, right? And you kept an eye because sometimes stuff happened in the country and the first time you saw it was on the news. Before it was reported in the media. And especially, well, not in our sector, but you had to watch the news because they would report stuff in your sector that most of the time wasn't really accurate, but you had to be familiar with it. So if you saw Fallujah up there, you know, it was probably a good thing that you knew what was being reported, or Ramadi, or Husseiba, or Al Qaim, or any of the garden spots that that we owned, Abu Ghraib, Nasr wa Salam. So anyway, I'll play the Situation Room. So we're working normal day, and all of a sudden, you know, this report comes on. And it's classic reporting, and I'll tell you about two reports that in my opinion were just, you just watched them and you just went, oh boy. So Roger Turner, who's now, he's the head of the Task Force Southwest, is headed back to Afghanistan, and he blew me off. Nice, he'll pay for that at some point. So Turner is a major. I'm a major, and we had sent two other majors, John Myrna, who played football at Florida State with Deion Sanders, and J.J. Carroll, whose dad was a captain at the basic school when I was there. So, and they're great guys. I taught all three of them at IOC, so now we're all working together as majors. So Myrna and Carroll go down to Fallujah to be the current ops guys for Al-Fajr. Turner and I stay to preside over Ramadi, Husseiba, Iskandaria, Mamadiyah, the rest of the battle space, right? Because we had a huge, Al-Anbar was huge, man. So, anyway, this report comes on. (clears throat) 3,300 Marines and sailors are executing operation and, you know, operation Twitter feed, here in the Triangle of Death. And you're just like, what did that guy just say? I don't know. It's something about the Triangle of Death. I didn't hear the rest of it. Turn it up. So turn it up. And then, you know, this big CNN report. And so pick up the phone, right? And you work with these guys every day. So you pick up the phone and some captain down at 24th Mew or 22nd Mew, whatever the hell it was. It's like, hey, what's going on today? What's Triangle of Death in operation? Oh, yeah, so that's our PAO. He just put out kind of a press release. And it's the operation is just our continuing cordon searches. And then the 33 number is just a number of everybody here. And then he made up that whole Triangle of Death thing because he thought it was cool. So just for the record, business as usual, right? And that's, you know, it's the reporters. It's what they do, right? And God help you if you're back in the United States trying to figure it out, right? You don't have a chance. Because those ass clowns, it's just like, come on. They got to fill space. Give me a story. I happen to be with the Mew. And here's what the PAO handed me. Hey, here you go, buddy. Hey, thanks. Same stuff. Anyway, so... And then the other story I will tell you about CNN before I continue with the Chinese and take you to the Situation Room, with apologies, but it is an amusing place. The Situation Room where reports come in on a moment by moment. You ever see Wolf Blitzer do that stuff? Oh, my God. Thank God a real combat operations center is not as crazy as the Situation Room. You wouldn't be able to stay in there for more than like 3 hours. So anyway, the other report is... this guy named, he had a crooked nose. He was a Brit, probably in his late 30s, and he had a crooked nose. That's what I remember about him. And so he goes, there was a dispute between, it was a Chamber of Commerce event, a dispute between two sheikhs. I want to say Mamadia is down south of Baghdad, and we own that. When the army kind of surged in, or they drug their forces back into Baghdad, we were given additional battle space. So we occupied them. We had units come in. The Mews would come ashore and service some of this battle space. So anyway, they're down there. And so a glass factory had opened, and so one tribe owns a glass factory, right? But a lot of their people use a road. Yeah, a road. Now that road is owned by and goes over a bridge owned by another tribe. So when they start the second shift at the glass factory, now the road's getting used more. So the other sheikh says, hey, I want more money. And glass factory sheikh says, stick it up your ass. And then Road Bridge Shake says, oh, really? I stick it up my ass? Oh, I don't think so. So he captures, like, the whole night crew. They just set up a roadblock, and they kidnap everybody. And so this guy goes on TV, and he says, under the nose of coalition forces, Iraqi insurgents captured 80 Iraqi citizens that are employees, and blah, blah, blah. And you're looking at the report going, what is he talking about? And then one of the intel guys say, oh, sir, that's that thing that went on yesterday, late in the afternoon, where they set up a roadblock, and we sent guys down and sent them away? Oh, okay. Well, what's he talking about? Oh, two sheikhs are fighting down there, and so one guy grabbed the whole night shift of the guy's glass factory, and they'll settle it at some point. So it's a Chamber of Commerce dispute that gets painted like it's at the time an Al Qaeda event, and you're watching it. So, and that's all CNN too, because you got to feed the beast, baby. You got to feed the beast. Okay, developing now. I'm gonna play this for you. This is CNN. Okay. With the headline, it's it looks like an F-18 on an aircraft carrier. Nothing shows a sense of urgency like aircraft being catapulted off a aircraft carrier. Okay, so here you go. And then the headline is developing now.
Tonight, China is already preparing for the worst. U.S. officials tell CNN,
right,
Beijing is putting missile-capable bombers and other military aircraft on, quote, high alert.
High alert.
This as more than 1,000 U.S. troops team up with South Korean forces for Operation Max Thunder, one of the largest military exercises between the two countries. As tensions with North Korea boil over, Kim Jong-un vowing to meet U.S. threats of a preemptive strike. An op-ed in a North Korean state newspaper warns...
And Kim Jong-un, that guy needs to learn how to salute. He salutes like a scumbag.
Quote, our preemptive strike towards U.S. and its followers will be the most merciless strike, aiming for a complete destruction that doesn't allow for the survival of the enemies.
That's right.
If the super powerful strike goes forward, they add, the U.S. mainland will be completely destroyed in an instant. Only ashes will be left. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the Trump administration is trying to force North...
How about that? Only ashes. We're going to do that with both of our nuclear weapons. What a bunch of jackasses.
North Korea to the negotiating table for a political solution to the crisis.
Thank God.
We're reviewing all the status of North Korea, both in terms of state sponsorship of terrorism.
I like Rex, though. He seems to be a grown-up to me.
As well as all the other ways in which we can bring pressure to bear on the regime in Pyongyang to re-engage, but re-engage with us on a different foot.
Texans saying Korean names, always amusing.
Footing than the past talks have been held.
It's never worked before, but U.S. officials say the strategy hinges on China putting the pressure.
Key to that statement, it's never worked before. Question, what will be the price that China requires to do it?
On Kim's regime. Beijing has already banned imports of North Korean coal and stopped Air China flights to Pyongyang. And today, China supported a tough U.N. Security Council resolution condemning North Korea's missile tests. Now President Trump wants President Xi Jinping to limit trade and cut oil imports to North Korea in exchange for a better trade deal with the U.S.
Yeah, so now we're talking business, okay? The question is, as Grant Newsham said, will they participate in something that actually hurts North Korea?
All this chest thumping on our part is probably less designed to influence the North Koreans than it is designed to influence the Chinese, who do not want to.
This is Michael Hayden, okay? Former what, head of the CIA?
Us disturbing the equilibrium in that part of the world. So maybe we can use this as a lever against them to get them to do more.
The North Korean Monitoring Service 38 North warns the country's nuclear test site is, quote, primed and ready. But in an odd development, the group released satellite imagery of what appears to be three volleyball games underway at different locations at the site. The U.S. officials tell CNN...
They like their volleyball. That's what they're doing. This is wag the dog, man. Wag the dog. They're playing volleyball. We're going to war. Whatever.
Then they are still bracing for a nuclear test at any time.
There you have it from the Situation Room, okay? From the Situation Room. There's some serious there's some serious stuff going on in the Situation Room. No, it always makes me laugh. You watch it, and especially when you're deployed and you watch it and you're part of something, you laugh. You're like, God. And again, what you really think is, or what I used to think was, you know, the poor American people. How do they figure out up from down if this is your news source? Yeah. The answer is you don't. Because they don't, do you think they hear Grant Newsham at length? No, they might hear 30 seconds of Grant Newsham. You know, little clips of him. But do they hear him at the length that they need to in order to be able to be smart about this stuff? No. That's why you listen to All Marine Radio, man. You'll get smart about this stuff. I know, because I like to get smart. I mean, and I've been to Korea. I mean, I've seen all the crazy things they have going on there. But you begin to, you know, consider, well, what cards do you have? And then Grant tells you that, I mean, they've been preparing for this for almost 70 years. How have they guaranteed their security? Well, they want to be very, very hard to kill. Very hard to kill. And so how did they become very hard to kill? Well, the way they become very hard to kill is they have a ton of missile launchers, they have a ton of artillery, and they say, look, unless they simply nuke us to death, there's no way conventionally that they can get us. So we're going to deliver such a blow to Seoul and the infrastructure of South Korea. We're going to put such a hurting on them that they'll never try it. They will never, ever, ever try it. So that's what they've been preparing for 70 years. So the concept of, can you do it? The answer is you can, but it'll be extremely expensive. You're going to pay for it. It's not going to be like Tomahawk missiles in the Middle East and then somebody's going to back down or somebody's going to, you know, change their posture. The North Koreans aren't going away. So anyway, so with that said, China and North Korea, complicated relationship. That's pretty interesting. Anyway, these recent steps by the Chinese are assessed as part of an effort to reduce the time to react. I find it amusing, right? I find it amusing. So anyway, the article goes on to say, Beijing has long been concerned with the potential instability in North Korea should the regime in Pyongyang collapse, fearing another influx of both refugees and the potential reunification under a South Korean government closely allied with the U.S., which they would prefer not to see. China is also opposed to the U.S. military presence in South Korea, protesting the recent U.S. and South Korea decision to begin deploying elements of THAAD missile defense system. Why would a defense system bother anybody? Given the close economic links between North Korea and China, U.S. military officials have said that Beijing is critical to solving the North Korean situation. So, interesting. Several senior administration officials told CNN on Thursday, and now this is a quote, "Nobody thinks the Chinese are going to press North Korea militarily or bring the regime to its knees, but the strategy looks to China to find a political solution more than anything else." So, we shall see. Here's Mike Pence as part of the article. The vice president in Korea, and where he was last weekend. And I'm sure you saw a bunch of pictures of him up at the DMZ, and he's gone to talk to our partners in the region to reassure them that, you know, hey, you know us, right? You've seen how we've done it in Iraq and Afghanistan. I can't even say it with a straight face. You've seen how we've done it in Iraq and Afghanistan. We mean business, right? We're going to be here for you, blah, 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 blah. Right? If you're like one of those leaders, you look at him like, are you really saying this to me? Mike Pence.
On the USS Ronald Reagan, I want to ask about something, first of all, that's making headlines in the United States and here right now, and that is that last week the U.S. military and the administration.
Okay, now, just so you know, this is being done on the USS Ronald Reagan, okay, somewhere in the Western Pacific. Okay, and you can hear the engines in the background if you listen.
Announced that another ship, the USS Carl Vinson, was heading toward the Korean Peninsula, and the White House said it was a powerful deterrent vis-a-vis North Korea. And now we learn that it wasn't. In fact, it was going the other direction. So, were these misleading comments deliberate?
Oh, I think not. Look, we've got an extraordinary commitment of U.S. forces in this region. And the Carl Vinson and that battle group are being deployed to the Sea of Japan and will likely arrive here in the coming weeks. But the presence of U.S. forces, as I saw firsthand in South Korea, more than 30,000 personnel. Here in Japan, more than 50,000 personnel. Being aboard the USS Ronald Reagan and seeing these extraordinary soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines gives me great confidence that the United States presence in the Asian Pacific is strong, and under President Trump's leadership, it'll be stronger still.
Let's talk about North Korea and what you've been saying while here in the region, that the strategy of the U.S. will be to reach out to allies in the region, and that the best path to dialogue, you're saying, is through a family of nations. I got to tell you, that sounds a whole lot like the six-party talk back in the Bush administration that failed. How is your policy different?
I think that the president has made it very clear that after more than two decades of failed dialogue and even what was called strategic...
Now, remember Grant Newsham's admonition to all of us. Hey, the United States has been content to talk, to protest, and then fade to black, okay? So that's how we got here.
Strategic patience, that the patience of the United States and our allies in this region has really run out, and that we are now going to begin to take such measures, diplomatically and economically, to isolate the regime in Pyongyang. And the encouraging news, Dana, for anyone looking on, is that because of President Trump's leadership, now we're not only seeing our allies in South Korea and Japan and in the wider world standing with us, but China has taken unprecedented steps now to begin to economically isolate North Korea. And given the fact that China represents more than 80% of the exports from North Korea, is enormously important to their economic marketplace. We believe this is an important step forward.
So I just want to try to drill down on the diplomatic side of this a little bit more. Will the U.S. actually sit down in any way, shape, or form for diplomatic negotiations with North Koreans?
You know, whether you go back to the agreed framework of the 1990s or the six-party
Well, not that.
Talks.
Just looking forward, whatever version it would be, will there be any negotiating, whether it's direct? I mean, you can answer that. Could you see a direct negotiation with North Korea and the U.S.?
I think not at this time. The policy that President Trump has articulated is to marshal the support of our allies in the region, here in Japan, in South Korea, nations around the world, and China, who have taken the position now for decades of a nuclear-free Korean peninsula.
Bilateral talks, that's not going to happen. Understandable. Is there a move or a thought that, as part of those diplomatic steps you're talking about, to get the nations like South Korea, like Japan, maybe even China, back to the table with North Korea and the U.S.? Is that something you think is doable and would make much of a difference?
I think the president's vision for this is very straightforward, and that is that we are going to make it clear to the regime in Pyongyang that the days of broken promises, the days of running out the clock on agreements with the wider world are over. That when you look at two nuclear tests in the last year alone, you look at an unprecedented number of ballistic missile launches, there's no question that North Korea represents the most dangerous and most immediate threat in the Asian Pacific. And President Trump is determined to confront that threat by marshaling unprecedented cooperation of our allies in the region and China and the world.
You've got your rhetorical strategy down, and so does the president. But is it a rhetorical strategy in search of an actually practical diplomatic approach?
I think it's eminently practical. I think the president's direct engagement with President Xi of China and the fact that now you've seen China turning back coal shipments from North Korea, making changes in the ability of people to travel by air from Pyongyang into China, and other measures that they may well take in the future, demonstrates the kind of hands-on diplomacy that President Trump has brought to this. And that's what it will take.
Did the missile test that the North Koreans launched while you were on your plane heading to the region fail because the U.S. used any electronic or cyber technology to sabotage it?
I really can't comment on the electronic or technical capabilities of our military, but we certainly recognize that was a failed missile test. It failed almost immediately.
Talk about a non-statement. We certainly recognize that was a failed missile test. What did that mean? Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
It's like another recent test.
But the U.S. didn't have anything to do with it?
But, I can't comment either way, as you know, Dan. What I can say is
a little bit of theater on her part.
It was one more provocation by a regime that continues to flout the views of the international community. And it's got to come to an end.
You know what's important about all of that is that this, the seed of doubt be planted in the Korean mind, that the North Korean mind, that is the United States doing this? Are they blowing up our missiles? So if they can do that, our missiles are never going to get, they're not even going to get out of our time zone, let alone threaten our nation. Are they doing that? Seed of doubt and decision making. If so, those missiles are worthless to us. They're worthless. Now we need to get a submarine so they can't track us. Yeah, no kidding. The importance of submarines and moving intercontinental ballistic missiles. That's what we did with the Russians, right? The Triad. Bombers, land-based and sea-based. Arguably the most important are the sea-based. And there's this cat and mouse game played on the ocean floor of hiding those submarines, the boomers, if you will, and then during a Cold War thing, and trying to find them. So we're going to take a break. We're checking the news here and checking North Korea. So that was the vice president with CNN in the Situation Room. Okay. And, again, the question is, here's what, you could say a lot of things about Donald Trump. I'll tell you one thing he has done, which is he's focused the world's attention, on Korea. He's taken concrete steps, and then the spotlight has migrated to China. China is the nation that can make a difference. The question is, will they? And then the question is, at what price? So, this hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug, with its Picatinny rails. It is what every operator ought to have. Starts out as a 10-pound block of aluminum, milled, machined, and anodized, and then it's ready for you with the rails. Check it out. Go check out some of the crazy stuff that you see on Battle Mugs. Go to their website, battlemug.com. They have a bunch of pictures that people have sent in of their own battle mugs. So you ought to check that out. Perfect for any commemorative event or special event. To let somebody know that's in this line of business that you wanted to get them something special. So you can you can check out the full line of products at battlemug.com. So check that out, and honestly, you'll find it amusing. And they have highball glasses, they have coffee cups. The Battle Mug is a robust coffee cup. So check it out. We're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Friday edition right here. Yeah, Mac, where's the chef? The chef, he had to. somebody just sent me another question. Mac, how did you go from forcible lat move to supply to an IOC instructor and company command with 3rd LAR? Don't think I've heard that story. I'll tell that one when we come back. Yeah. So, yeah, you know what? Here I thought I didn't have a program. Nothing but good today. All right, we're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio. How I got out of the supply field, next.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. But the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, hold on a second. I gotta play some music, okay? We're kind of like just cruising through the morning, okay? Don't get excited. Continue on a Friday. 8:05 on the West Coast, 11:05 on the East Coast. Almost time for lunch, boys and girls. Yeah. All right, we're gonna hit the pause button on checking the news, especially on my analysis of North Korea. But again, it's all bullshit till China does something. Bombers on alert. The Russians have flown off the coast of California for years until they couldn't get their asses there. Okay, so now they've got at least four aircraft that can get there. They don't have shit. Okay, it's a bluff. Putin is a bluffer. He takes the small military that he has that can actually go, and he goes ahead and he bluffs all over the world. All over the world. And so to me, here's what I enjoy. Okay? What I enjoy is you don't hear a whole lot of discussion from the Pentagon. You don't hear a lot of announcement of troop movements. When General Mattis was asked about why the announcement about the Carl Vinson headed to North Korea, and he said, well, the only reason that is in the news is because it was going to one exercise, and then it was we had to inform the host nation and the exercise people that the Vinson would no longer be a part of it. That's the only reason it's in the news. Now, that from he tends to be a pretty straight shooter with that stuff. The what I like is you're seeing a United States that to me has a little bit more resolve than President Obama did, and you're not seeing the whole thing done in the media. Okay, we have a powerful military; it should be used for the purposes of what's in our national interest, and it's used most effectively when it doesn't fight. When it's postured and people know, hey, this is going to happen. It's called peace through strength, right? Yeah, it is. So, anyway, another email. Hey, Mac, I want to hear you talk about Gettysburg, too. And then here's another one. Hey, Mac, you love decision-making. Why don't you cock off about that for a while? You know what? I might do all three. The story about how I lat moved from supply to IOC. You normally, the rule in the Marine Corps is, among MOSs, or at least it used to be, you cannot move from an MOS that is short, and you can't move into an MOS that's over. Now, you can move between MOSs where the year groups are balanced. You can move from a balanced group to a short group, an over group to a short group. You can't move the other way. So I get augmented. I get told that I'm going to be a supply officer. And it's, obviously very disappointing, to say the least. But it was happening to a lot of guys, and, guys got told, it's important to be a Marine and a Marine officer, and whatever you do is not as important. Most of the guys who said that were not leaving their MOS. So it rang extremely hollow. I didn't join the Marine Corps, to give the Marine Corps my life and tell them that, hey, I will do whatever you want me to do for whatever number of years. I joined because I wanted to be an infantry officer. And I wanted to, lead, where the Marine Corps goes. So that's, that was what was in my head. So anyway, I go to supply school. I don't sign my augmentation papers because the career planner, something, he didn't have them, blah, blah, blah. My school convenes. I drive to Camp Lejeune. I'm the honor grad at for my ground supply, GSOC, ground supply officer course. So I'm the honor grad, and I have a picture somewhere taking me shaking General somebody's hand, who came over to, I'm a first lieutenant. And so I come back, and my battalion commander at 1st Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, it was actually 1st Light Armored Vehicle Battalion at the time, and LAV Battalion. We're based out of Camp Margarita with the 5th Marine Regiment. It's there that I encountered, not in any substantial way, but Colonel Drowdy was our regimental commander. He had followed Colonel Marty Brantner, who recently passed away. God bless him. Brantner was a Vietnam guy, Navy Cross, had about two-thirds of one of his calves shot off. And we used to see him go running around the camp, PTing at Margarita, hobbling, And we used to like, man, he's a badass. Look at him. Got his calf shot off. Navy Cross. Marty Brantner. Man, I remember he got all the lieutenants in the battalion together once and talked to us. And we just sat there and listened. Like, you know, that's big time, man. Colonel Brantner. And then, so we had two male Marines get found. I'm not sure what they were doing, but the rest of the camp started calling us Love Battalion. First, not LAB Battalion, First Love Battalion. My Marines were pissed. So anyway, but it was funny. I would have done the same thing. So anyway, Marty Steele, he's a lieutenant colonel. He's the first tanker in Marine Corps history that will go on to become a general officer. He gets out of the Marine Corps as a lieutenant general. All right, so Steele, he's my battalion commander. He says, I want you to put in an AA form to go back to the grunts. And I said, sir, other guys do that. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't work. And he looks at me, and he says, do what I tell you to do. Okay. So I put in my AA form, signing my justification. It comes back approved. Now, maybe it might come back 3 months later approved or something like that. But on a Saturday, I'm at my house at O'Neill Heights at Camp Pendleton, first lieutenant. Did we have a baby then? February of 1989, Charlie Boy Jeremy. Yeah, he must have just been born, I think. So my oldest son, John, it had been late January, early February 1989. Phone rings on a Saturday. My ex-wife Susan says, hey, Michael, General McMonagle's on the phone. Now, I had served with General McMonagle's son, Rich, in 1-5. And so, it's like General McMonagle's calling me for the first time in my life on a Saturday. Yeah. Either I'm going to be arrested or this is bullshit, right? So I go in the kitchen and, you know, I'm a respectful guy. Lieutenant McNamara speaking. Mike, Dick McMonagle, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine, sir. How are you? Now, why is General McMonagle, Major General McMonagle is division commander of the 1st Marine Division. And he's he's a friend of mine's dad, but I don't think I'd ever met him at that point. I don't think I'd ever met him at that point. He's a busy guy. He's a Vietnam guy, big time guy. So, now I'm like, why is he calling me on Saturday? Like, what the hell is this? So he goes, hey, I've got some great news for you. And I said, what's that, sir? He said, you got your MOS back. And I said, are you kidding me? He said, no. I said, I'm speechless. I thought that was just a fool's errand. He said, no. He said, you need to thank your battalion commander. He knows Friends in Manpower, and they did a little bit of digging. They found out that the Marine Corps produced less infantry officers in your year group, and they started producing more support MOSs. And so your year group for infantry officers is balanced, and the supply officer group for your year group is balanced. And so that your lat move request has been approved. And I was absolutely stunned. I was the happiest kid in the world. But it was my enthusiasm was quickly tempered. And then so I hang up the phone. I call Lieutenant Colonel Steele, and his wife Cindy answers the phone. And I say, "Hey, hi Cindy, Mike McNamara. Can I talk to the Colonel?" And she said, "Yeah, hold on, Mike." And I knew her, and they're wonderful people. She's a great woman. They got married when he was 18. He deploys to Vietnam, comes home, gets his degree, or finishes his enlistment, gets his degree. Goes to officer candidate school, goes back to Vietnam. So, I mean, they've grown up together. So it's very, very, people that are meant to be married and nice people. He gets on the phone. Hey, Sir Mac. He said, congratulations. And I said, you knew? And he said, yep. He said, but let me warn you something. He said, you need to keep this to yourself. He said, your group is unique. Everybody senior to you the guys have tried to do this, and because of their imbalances, they've not been allowed to. So, so don't talk a lot about it. Okay? And when you need to come back, when you get to work on Monday, go to the career planner's office and sign your augmentation package. I had told the career planner I wasn't going to augment. And because I went to a school that was more than 10 months or 10 weeks, I owed an additional either 12 or 24 months. I can't remember which. And I said, well, no. I said, I'll do that. And then I had to go when that happened. But I said I wouldn't accept my augmentation. And this had only happened maybe a month before. And so I had to go see the division supply officer, and he chewed my ass. He told me how exciting supply was and all this other stuff. And I sat there and listened, and Steele warned me. He said, hey, do not do your little personality thing with him. Got it? He's not that guy. He will not suffer you well. Yes, sir. Sat there with my palms on my thighs, listened the whole time. He asked me a couple of questions. He asked me if I had any. I said, no, I did not. And he threw me out of his office. That Monday, I went and I signed my augmentation package, and I got to work. The battalion XO wanted to see me. He said, call your monitor and see what plans he has for you. I said, yes, sir. Called them, and they had a fill. They needed an executive officer right away on the USS Ranger, who was at sea at the time off the coast of California, and they were going to deploy in July. So I checked out the battalion, but that's the story. That's the story of how I got my MOS back. Yeah, and it didn't happen to guys, and I felt bad. And then guys heard about it, and they'd call me, hey, how did you do that? And I'd say, it's a year group thing, man. They were like, damn it. Well, maybe mine will balance out here in the next year. Or maybe by virtue of the lap moves into supply, mine will balance out. And it did for some. It changed a little bit. But it was crappy. It was not a pleasant thing to go through for any of those guys. And a lot of guys got out because of it. More news before I get back to other things. Tillerson compares Iran to North Korea and vows the Trump administration won't pass the buck. So in a reference to the Obama administration kicking the can down. Anyway, lawmakers say that the president needs Congress's approval to wage war on ISIS. So, I mean, I've asked that question myself. We have a war in Iraq that has now spilled into Syria. So this thing is morphed. So what is the end state? The end state is go to Raqqa? The end state is go to Damascus? What is it? So anyway, I'm curious about that. And I think that that debate needs to happen. And not a political debate, but it simply needs to be articulated. So it needs to be articulated for the American people, so we know what we're doing, what we've gotten into, and all of that kind of stuff. Another email for today. So I'm in San Diego on Honda business. Last night, four of us are having dinner at the Carl Strauss Brewery and Grill around the corner of the hotel. I noticed several Secret Service types coming in and start doing their thing. We asked the waitress who the VIP is, Jeff Sessions. As I made a stroll to the boys' room to get a visual, I was surprised to see that his dinner partner was General Kelly. So this morning I check out the street where my buddy was to pick me up on her way to Golf Nirvana. And all the black Suburbans are out on the street with a fire team reinforced of Secret Service dudes on the sidewalk. And I have to hang out with a suitcase, a set of golf clubs, and a travel bag, and a backpack on hoping that a short, fat 53-year-old from Ohio doesn't look like a threat. How about that? Breaking news from Bill. Bill from Ohio. Bill from Ohio. He should get a name, because he listens all the time. He listens all the time. He's a great listener. Other stories here in the early bird. South Korea on a heightened alert as North readies for Army celebration. You know, you would think that the South Koreans, that's no joke, that there are certain preparations they would make if this is going to be a shooting war. That U.S. Won't be that if this is going to be a shooting war, that South Koreans would be wise. From Tel Aviv, Israel. And the story is this. Pentagon chief, U.S. will not reveal the mother of all bombs death toll. The story, the ear-splitting explosion from America's mother of all bombs has been followed by calculated silence about the damage it inflicted. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis on Thursday said he does not intend to discuss damage estimates from last week's use of the military's most powerful non-nuclear bomb on an Islamic State stronghold in Afghanistan. On April 13th, an attack on an ISIS tunnel and cave complex near the Pakistani border that supposedly was built by the CIA marked the first ever combat use of the bomb, officially known as the GBU-43 Bravo, or the Massive Ordnance Air Blast Bomb, MOAB, which has been bastardized to Mother of All Bombs. U.S. military officials have said that the 11-ton bomb effectively neutralized an ISIS defensive position. We talked about this earlier in the week. Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai called the use of the weapon an immense atrocity against the Afghan people. Okay, that guy needs to shut up and stop carrying water for the Taliban. Okay, reporters traveling with Mattis in Israel asked for his assessment of the bomb's damage, but he refused. Quote, for many years we have not been calculating the results of warfare by simply quantifying the number of enemy killed, Mattis said. He's like a professor, like rolling around the country. And, and giving these mini lectures to reporters. But he has great quotes. And you know what? The other thing is that he loves it. He does. He doesn't shy away from this stuff. Because he thinks that we've not sent the correct messages over the course of the year. It was very interesting to work for him, to be with him and work with him and see him in these meetings. Mattis, who assumed office hours after Donald Trump's inauguration on January 20th, hasn't publicly discussed such numbers. He said Thursday his view was colored by lessons learned from the Vietnam War, where exaggerated body counts undermined U.S. credibility. Quote, you all know the corrosive effect of that sort of metric back in the Vietnam War, and it's something that stayed with us all these years. Said Mattis, who was in Tel Aviv to meet Israeli government leaders on Friday. He met Thursday in Egypt with President El-Sisi. The publicity generated by the bomb in Afghanistan caught many Pentagon leaders by surprise, leading to questions about whether U.S. commanders fully considered the strategic effects of something seemingly so isolated. Mattis said he was confident his commanders were weighing their actions. Quote, if they didn't, I'd remove them, he said. Is that awesome? Yeah, he's all about it. He loves the whole thing. He loves the whole thing. So, General Mattis in Tel Aviv commenting on the mother of all bombs. And look for more of that in a more professionally run Department of Defense. Designed, and Mattis is on a Times 100 Most Influential People list. How about that? And then a couple of Marine Corps headlines. Marine Corps PACs are falling, are are failing in the Arctic. So congratulations to our supply system. Nice guy. And that's about it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about Gettysburg real quick. Well, maybe not. Take a few minutes. I'll bust out my map, and I'll tell you about Gettysburg. Okay? So it's an interesting battle for a lot of different reasons. So I'll tell you what I find most interesting. So we're going to take a quick break. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Friday on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global Soft Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global Soft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Stand by. Target.
Group is called 38 Special. Song is called Second Chance.
Since you've been gone, I feel my life slipping away. I look to the sky, and everything is turned away. All I make is one mistake. How much more will I have to take? Why can't you think it over?
It's one of the better parts of having a show. You can sing. Alright. 11:32 on the East Coast, 8:32 on the West Coast, 10:32 in the Central Time Zone. And in the Mountain Time Zone, it's 9:32. That's right. That's how that works. So let me tell you about Gettysburg. Let me tell you why I found it fascinating. So much written there, right? Becomes the kind of glamour battle of the Civil War. And which is a good thing, because when you read about it, a lot of people wrote about it. And so stationed in Quantico, I had never been to Gettysburg. So I go up there. And after I read a bunch about it. And battlefield still laid out. You go to the same places. Both sides wrote about it. They both speak English. So you can read what this guy read or wrote. And then you read what that guy wrote. And it's awesome. Absolutely incredible. What, you know, that kind of experience. So, pretty cool picture of F-35s escorting Bear Delta bombers, their long-range reconnaissance bomber. Yeah. So, F-35. Yeah, how about that? So, anyway. So there's a ton of information about Gettysburg. So I would go up there. I'd take my kids. I'd get up early in the morning, and it would be about a three-hour drive up there. So leave, I don't know, 6:30, 7, get up there in 10, and I would stay. You know, my ex-wife was working at a place called the Christmas Attic in Alexandria, Virginia. So she's working on Saturday, so she's going to be gone. So I take the kids. We're going to Gettysburg. Pack their toys. And, you know, they're going to be running around outside all day, you know. It's just the two boys. And Patrick's a little guy, and John's probably, I don't know, 4. Patrick's 1 or 2. So I got Patrick in a backpack or something. I've got my Jay Luvas guide, U.S. Military guide to Gettysburg. So go here. And then there's extracts, and so it's very cool. Jay Luvas, a great historian, Civil War time, taught at the Army War College in Carlisle. So I went up there, and then that would fuel the more I read, the more I wanted to read about it, different parts of the battle. And so really, then at IOC where I was working at the time, we used to go to Gettysburg. And we'd kind of do a battlefield tour. And so I went in one day and said to Major Allen, John Allen, you know him as General Allen. So I said, hey, sir, I'd like to put together a decision-making exercise, because I was teaching a decision-making class. I'd like to put together, when we go to Gettysburg, like 4 or 5 stops and looking at decisions. the lieutenants will play the parts, okay? So a lieutenant will be Longstreet, a lieutenant will be Lee, a lieutenant will be the major players in that decision. And they'll know that, I'll give them their bio, so they'll know who these guys are, what battles they fought, and how they're characterized and what kind of leaders they are. And then we'll do that for both Union and Confederates. And they'll stand up and say, hey, I'm James Longstreet, educated at the University of North Carolina. I'm a railroad guy by trade. I was in the Army. I got out. Blah, 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 blah. So, and so we looked at decisions. Decision one was day one in the morning. Buford, the cavalry guy west of the city, decides that he's going to take on Union infantry west of the city and try to hold them west of the city. So John Reynolds, the commander of, I want to say the 1st Corps, let's see if I have my corps right, John Reynolds can get there. And what Buford saw in Gettysburg with the ridgelines there was defendable terrain. That the Union, if they could occupy that, and they could take the South on there, that they would have, the terrain lent itself to good fighting, to a good defensive position. And Lee had come north seeking a decision so that Lee would fight. So, so that was the first decision. And it's very interesting. Buford with his, I think they're Spencer repeating rifles, but the carbines that they use west of the city, their high rate of fire, holds off Henry Heth, who went to Gettysburg looking for shoes. Lee gave his permission, and then when Lee heard the boom of cannons, then he headed in that direction. And what happened was the beginning of a general engagement ensued, which Lee did not want to have happen. Lee's blind, though, because Stuart held a big, big parade at a place called Brandywine. As Lee disengaged from the Rappahannock River where they had been encamped all winter and hopped in the Shenandoah Valley and went north to Gettysburg. Stuart has a big parade and then says, asks Lee, I want to cut between our present position and I want to ride towards Washington, D.C. I'm going to raise a bunch of hell and then I'll meet you. Okay? The Union Army characterized by slow movement. And so Stuart thinks he'll have plenty of time. Ultimately, what happens is Meade, when he finds out Lee's gone, he turns around and he goes north. And Meade is a brand new commander, but they go north and they move quickly. The Union, for the first time probably in the war, has solid guys commanding at their core and divisions. The political guys have been pushed aside by the military guys. And so the Union Army goes north with the first string, right? And at every chance, really, at Gettysburg, they hit it right on the screws. So because Lee moves quickly, Stuart tries to turn west after he threatens D.C., blah, 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 cavalry nonsense, right? Stuart tries to head west now, and he bumps into Meade. Right, he bumps into those corps that are moving north, and he can't get to Lee. Lee's on the other side of the mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains, with the cavalry that he did retain. They occupy those gaps in the Blue Ridge Mountains, right? And so to keep the Union from being able to see what they're doing, but they're hearing about it. So Lee goes north, but he doesn't know where the Union Army is, and he doesn't have communications with Stuart. And so they stumble into arguably the most decisive battle of the Civil War, the high water mark, if you will. They stumble into that as a meeting engagement. So the first day's decisions, Buford's decision where to fight, Reynolds' decision to move quickly to reinforce him. Reynolds was killed on the first day. That was one. That's one interesting decision. The second really, really interesting decision is Lee's decision to attack on day two, and the intelligence that Lee has, which is really interesting if you're into this kind of military stuff. It's really interesting because I've told you. I should find it. I should find it and read it. I should do it today, but if I knew where it was, I would. It's a letter by a captain by the name of S.R. Johnston, and he writes this in the aftermath of the war, and it's published, and it's footnoted in Lafayette McClaws. Lafayette McClaws is part of the attack on Little Round Top on the second day, so they're trying to figure out, you know, who was right, who was wrong. Longstreet got accused of dragging his feet, and then he lost the war because of it, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, but the letter is really cool because, he, you know, it's all written in the first person, you know. I was laying by the fire when General Lee came and woke me, which was his custom. He took me to a lamp, and we looked at the map. He instructed me to go to yonder small top to conduct my reconnaissance after I moved down the tree line. So Lee tells him what he wants. He goes. He comes back. He doesn't see things he should have seen. He paints for Lee a picture of the Union forces much closer to Gettysburg than they are in terms of where their positions are. The Union forces stretch from Gettysburg proper, the city, there's a hill, cemetery, ridge. So they're arrayed there. And, but the position extends already farther south than Lee's engineer recognizes. So Lee has, at the time that he gets the report, it's already a false picture. And then it gets worse during the course of the day as more units arrive and they get plugged in. So when ultimately, so that whole thing is really interesting. But they almost do it. And the next decision that we used to go to is, so Lee's conception of the attack on day two, really interesting. The next decision is one I've talked about a little bit on the program, and that is, Strong Vincent, and how the attack on the Union left flank unfolds. The Confederates still could have beat them. They march, right, further south, right, and then what they want to do is get on the Union flank like they did at Chancellorsville and roll them up. Well, the Union flank wasn't where they thought it was. So when they stick their nose out of a tree line, they get like four battalions worth of artillery shot in the face. McClaws turns around and looks at Longstreet and says, "Are you shitting me? This doesn't look like a flank." And what they do is they try to extend the flank. Right, so as they bring guys in, everybody's going to the right, which was south, and they're wrapping around Little Round Top, and it's this race between the Union, the Confederate Army to extend to the right and launch the attack, the Union Army, which has troops behind the wheat field in the center part of the battlefield, and you have a guy named Warren go up to Little Round Top, and he gets his binoculars and he looks through, and he said he saw the glint of bayonets, you know, glistening off the sun. And he could see the how, where they were going, and he has his "oh shit" moment, and he sees they're going. Well, the Union, well, the Confederates, geometrically weren't where they needed to be. They were going to be where they needed to be. So he sends orders to bring a brigade to the small round top. That's where Vincent comes in. Vincent intercepts the courier, and the courier says, "Sir, I cannot give this." This is a southern accent, but it works for me anyway. "Sir, I cannot give this report to you. It is for General Barnes." Barnes is Vincent's brigade commander. All right, so Vincent, a regimental commander. No, Vincent is the colonel. He's the brigade commander. Barnes is the division commander. Okay, let me get that straight. So, Vincent says, "Give me it. I'll take responsibility for this." So he opens it, sees the message, and he hands it back to the courier. He says, "Go find General Barnes. Tell him I am en route to the small round top." So Vincent turns around, tells his couriers, "Tell everybody that round top now." He goes up there with his guide on so people know where to go. They start getting shot at. He looks down, and he sees the bayonets, and he has his "oh shit" moment. Oh shit. So he's looking kind of south. He looks to his right, and the fight going on in the wheat field and the peach orchard and all that. He's like, "We're going to get our flank rolled up again. It's not going to be good." Vincent's from Pennsylvania, A lot of these guys are from Pennsylvania for the Union. Buford was from Pennsylvania. No, Buford was from out west. Reynolds was from Pennsylvania. Hancock from Pennsylvania. Meade from Pennsylvania. So they're all going back to their home state, fighting in their home state, which certainly fired them up. Anyway, we're talking about Gettysburg now. So when Vincent's brigade, the lead elements, get to Little Round Top, Patrick O'Rourke, the fighting up there, he's 23 years old from West Point. He gets to the top, and he sees the Confederates are now coming up from they're at the base of Little Round Top. And he knows they don't have time to deploy and get ready, so he says, sound the charge. And they don't even deploy from column to being online. They fight with nothing in their rifles. They head down that hill to just, you know, they're going to have a swamp party. They're going to get it on with fixed bayonets with the Confederates. So this thing starts. And now other regiments are coming into line, filling in to the left of O'Rourke, who started this fight. And Vincent's mortally wounded. He's shot in the groin, severs his artery. He bleeds out in the next 24 hours. So he's laying there bleeding out. And then Chamberlain winds up being the last guy in on the far left. And that's the story of Joshua Chamberlain and all that. But really, the story is not as significant as the initiative, the decision-making, the coordination, all that that is real for any commander and small unit leader. And it was those things that we wanted lieutenants to see. You know, so it was very interesting. Let me tell you the other decision. Then the last decision we looked at was on day three, Pickett's charge. Why do that? And it's like, look, sir, it's suicide. Look at all this flat ground. And, you know, the Union's up there. They've held that position for 2 days. It's like, okay, who's who? And, you know, it's like the guys who are Lee says, we don't lose. We've been in tight positions before. We don't lose. Every place I've ever put faith in my army, they've never let me down. Okay? They never let me down. Okay? Then the guy who's, I think the general's name is Alexander, he's the head of artillery, right? He stands up and says, here's the plan today, boys. We are going to take every bit of artillery we own, we're going to stack it hub to hub, and we're going to blow their ass right off the front of that mountain, right off the front of that hill, Cemetery Ridge, right? Lee stacks, according to European observers, more artillery than they had ever seen in the history of God and creation. Hub to hub to hub to hub. I want to say like 250 pieces. Imagine that. 250 artillery pieces. And they start blowing it up. The problem is they can't see the impact of the rounds. And they're overshooting Cemetery Ridge. So the Arty guys screw up Gettysburg. Just like they screw up everything else. So had the appropriate elevation and been able to see, and it's a hot, humid day, so the smoke is sticking in front of the batteries as they begin to fire, and they would have blown a hole in Hancock and all those guys, because they jacked them up and they missed with three quarters of the round. Yeah, if they would have hit, there would not have been a whole lot left in the center of that position. So what Lee does is he fire supports the living hell out of it. And so what looks to be, you know, that's a crazy frontal attack, is really designed to be a penetration after, you know, an unprecedented artillery preparation. So that's what we used to go up to Gettysburg and not kind of go walk around the battlefield and look at the statues and all that kind of stuff. I mean, because they can do that on their own. But what we tried to do was make it a very professional look into decision-making in combat and how that those guys at Gettysburg dealt with the same issues that these lieutenants dealt with, which was what? Friction and uncertainty. You know, this guy doesn't know what's going on. What does he do? You know, this guy doesn't know what's going on. What does he do? How does he handle it? And you see the different ways throughout history that people handle it. And so, and then you see the different contributions of individuals in a battle. And so, so it was extremely, extremely, extremely interesting. And so it was my affinity really for decision making that kind of that drove that. And it was a labor of love. I think I still have like parts of it, parts of the things that I did. And I, you know, I had a timeline and, you know, all this craziness. But, we'd go up there and we'd have maps, for the lieutenants and, you know, we'd look at the overall situation and then they'd stand up and kind of talk about their thing. And then we'd talk about the decision. And at the end of the day, the goal of it was at the end of the day, what you wanted them to do, we'd go, you know, have a beer or two and hang out and talk about it, was for them to say, wow, I didn't realize how much I could learn. And there was a few parts of it that was really cool. And I want to say one of it was, from the Confederate perspective, looking at Little Round Top right after they came out of the tree line initially, and they get hammered by artillery from the peach orchard. And whoever wrote it, and I can't remember who wrote it, talked about, what they expected and then what happened when they looked out. And then, you know, they take casualties, the heavy smoke hanging in the valley, trying to see the flash of where the artillery pieces were. And you're sitting there looking across the valley at the peach orchard that's still there. And you're like, holy smokes, man. That's incredible. And then the way he describes it vividly, the sound of horses, you know, the neighing of horses, as some were hit. And which was something they were used to in combat. So yeah, Gettysburg, you know, and the other battlefields are great. Another beautiful one is Sharpsburg that's much closer to Quantico. And, that was incredible battle. Got fought to a draw, primarily because the Union found the Confederate battle plan. Yeah. And what the interesting part about Antietam is Lee fights with his army, and both flanks tied to the river behind him. And so if he's overrun, I mean, his army is destroyed. And so one of the interesting things you learn about Lee is, you know, Robert E. Lee, the picture of him is, you know, he's got the white hair, he's on the, you know, traveler, the white horse and all that, very stately, regal looking guy. And yet, in his head, he's the University of Miami. He is a trash-talking, you know. He's never afraid to bet on the Army of Northern Virginia, ever. And so it's really interesting as you learn more about the Civil War. It's really interesting to go ahead and to kind of piece it together. And you learn more and more about them. And those battlefields are just they're extremely well kept. The Rangers there have really interesting information. But if you go past the veneer level knowledge, and you go around and take a look at things they did, you can make history come alive, which is certainly what we try to do. So it was fun. And I loved it. I loved going to the Library of Congress and doing the research, finding, I find that letter, footnoted in Douglas Southall Freeman's papers, one of the volumes of Lee's Lieutenants. So I look at that and I want to read the letter though. It was a sentence quoted and then footnoted. So and so's letters, you know, National Archives, Washington DC. Freeman papers. And so I go up there, I have to register and get a card, and then I say, I need box 17 of Douglas Southall Freeman. And they look at me like, okay. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. You gotta be kidding me, man. You know, I'm gonna get to look at his stuff. That is shit, man. I'm gonna get to look at Douglas Southall. And sure enough, they bring you the box. Here's the papers. And I start going through it, and lo and behold, here's the letter. Here's the letter from, S.R. Johnston to Lafayette McLaws that was one of, and McLaws wrote about the letter in one of the Southern Historical Society, volumes, which are very cool. It's very, very cool. And so, so it's very, very good, very interesting stuff, as, the way, again, the way history can come alive. And you see Marines, do that, on Iwo Jima. They'll do similar things, when units get to, go there for a very short period of time. But it was certainly fun. And I can remember my kids getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. Quit whining, shut up. Daddy, we want to go home. Hey, shut up. You're on a battlefield here. Act like a fighter. So, it was cool. It was cool. So it was kind of my affinity for decision making and my love of history. I didn't study history in school, but I certainly would have enjoyed it. I love history, have my whole life, but I didn't think it was an appropriate, I didn't think a history degree would take me any place. And I'm not sure if I was right or wrong about that. So I chose economics, which to a certain degree was good for me, but I always love the teaching of decision making. You heard General Kennedy the other day talk about, you know, making decisions, and I was intrigued by that at the squad level, which is still my favorite level to teach at, watching the light go on, how this has to work in combat, how you have to do it in combat, and then the key role that, something we've started the program with, the key role that discipline plays in all of it. So, anyway, all right, with that said, we're going to take a break. The Star of All Marine Radio, brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug, Picatinny rails, make it something that you want to have, and it's built with the operator in mind. Perfect for any commemorative event, promotions, farewells, retirements, birthdays or anniversaries. It's a gift that says that you care. So check out the full line of products. Not only do they have Battle Mugs, shot glasses, coffee mugs, all kinds of cool stuff. Battlemug.com, enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company made entirely in the United States. More of All Marine Radio. The Gunner going to join us. Yeah. Michael Musselman coming up next on a Friday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our way of living, our quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.